Cancel culture dominates our public discussions, and it's growing more and more true within Catholicism as well. What does it mean to cancel somebody, and is it the Christian thing to do? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Simmons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, just want to encourage you to not cancel us. Instead, is this the opposite of canceling? To like us, to like this podcast and subscribe to it. You will be part of the anti-cancel culture if you do that. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag at all the major locations. Okay, so this week, I'm recording this on June 20th, I believe. Yeah, June 20th. And this week, I'm going to be speaking at the Coalition for Canceled Priest Conference. And it made me just think about this whole issue of being canceled, people being canceled. And a lot of things have happened in the Catholic world recently. Talk about not giving certain people platforms, not speaking at certain engagement, canceling this priest or that priest or whatever the case may be. And so I want to talk about that. And I'm going to talk about some specific examples at the end of this podcast. But I first want to address just kind of some general principles about canceling. Now, it's funny because 10 years ago, nobody talked about canceling. Nobody talked about cancel culture or anything like that. Yes, there were efforts to silence certain people, but it really isn't what it is now. And like most things, it probably has related somewhat to Trump and how crazy the left got because of that. Because there's a lot of canceling going on now, including with Trump himself. I just saw the other day where MSNBC won't show speeches by Donald Trump, who is the front runner for the presidential nomination for one of the two major parties, but they won't show speeches because they say, well, we just know it's going to be misinformation and falsehoods, so we're not going to show it. So they've essentially canceled him from their network. Likewise, Robert Kennedy Jr., who is polling very well, about 20% for president of the other major party, the Democrats, he also is being canceled by much of the liberal media. He's not being given a platform. Sometimes he'll give an interview. Like he gave an interview at ABC not too long ago, and they clipped out part of his answers because they just said, we know it's false, and so we're not gonna show it. And so we have a lot of canceling going on, like I said. Now, one thing is that typically most people, when they think of canceling, they think of liberals of the left canceling people for not being woke enough, for whatever arbitrary reasons. But it's true that both the left and the right cancel people. Obviously, recently, the right has canceled organizations very successfully. For example, Bud Light. I mean, Bud Light's a perfect example. Target has been targeted. The Dodgers, Los Angeles Dodgers. And so it's not just simply, when we look at it objectively, cancel culture does go both ways. Now, I would argue that it's more prevalent on the left and it's more arbitrary on the left. And most of the right cancellations are a reaction to something the left is doing, trying to basically even the playing field, so to speak. Now, I also think that a lot of cancel culture is social media driven. I don't think it's a real thing in real life for a lot of people. You get these controversies about, oh no, you're speaking at that conference. Didn't you know so-and-so is at that conference? And it becomes the biggest deal on Twitter, where people are just going crazy, talking about attacking each other and stuff. But then you talk to somebody at your parish and they have no idea what you're talking about because they're not on Twitter. They're not on social media, or they just aren't very slightly, maybe on Facebook or something. And so I do think a lot of cancel culture is social media, particularly Twitter driven, and not really a real thing in real life. So what is it when we say, what does it mean to cancel somebody? Because I think there's a lot of controversy here, because a lot of times I will, for example, say something against cancel culture and people say, well, you do the same thing. Like I saw this when I had an article against cancel culture a few weeks ago. Somebody immediately found where I had said that Father James Martin should be basically removed from public ministry. And they were basically saying, hey, you hypocrite. You're calling for the canceling of Father James Martin. How are you any different? How can you be against cancel culture? So I want to talk a little bit more detail what I mean, at least, by cancel culture and by canceling, and whether or not Catholics should do it. So basically, canceling just means that somebody, for whatever, for some reason, is not given a public platform, or even they could lose their job. Typically, it's a public type situation, like they're a public speaker, they're an author, they're on a TV show, something like that. And the idea is, no, this person should not be given a platform. And typically the reason is something they've done, said or done in the past. So for example, maybe they tweeted something 10 years ago that was racist in the eyes of the woke left. And so therefore they should not be given a platform. They should never be able to speak publicly again, unless they do, I mean, some type of reparations for that, I guess. And so sometimes, like I said, it calls on people to lose their jobs. Like, you will find where if a employee of a company makes a tweet that people don't like, people will call his employer and say, you need to fire this guy. And he might be working a job that's like, I don't know, janitor at a school or something like that. But it's like, no, you need to fire him because he expressed an opinion that is unwelcome on Twitter. That's probably the classic example of canceling. But it's grown and become even more prevalent and encompass much more, where if you are at an event, if you're speaking at an event, for example, where somebody else is speaking who is unclean, then that any other speaker who dares to speak at that also is unclean and needs to be canceled. Even if the event has nothing to do with the speaker in question. And so what we see here is it's kind of growing where you have to be more and more careful of not being considered unclean, not being considered somebody who has expressed thoughts that they should not express, or being associated with somebody like that. And so typically when we say cancel, we're talking about these situations, which to common sense and the objective eye are seen as unjust. Because, for example, I'm speaking this week at the Coalition for Canceled Priests, like I said, but canceled priest doesn't mean that no priest need to be removed from public ministry. In fact, if you ask Father Lovell of the head of Coalition for Canceled Priests, he'll tell you that immediately. If a priest, for example, is shown to have been abusive, then he should be canceled. He should be removed from public ministry. But that's not canceling, of course. He should be removed from public ministry. So if a priest is preaching heresy and is unrepentant of it, he should be removed from public ministry. So canceling doesn't mean just somebody losing their job, somebody losing their public position or something like that. It means it's done for an unjust reason, for a very tenuous reason. I'm going to give some examples from the Catholic world here in a little bit. So just hang on with that and what my own opinion is on these situations. Now, the whole cancel culture started originally just as a movement on college campuses, but it's got to be a lot more than that, of course. Ultimately, a lot of cancel culture is fundamentally condescending. What do I mean by that? What it's basically saying is people are too stupid to decide for themselves whether or not this person is saying something worthwhile. So, for example, RFK Jr., because he's advocated against or advocated for safe vaccines against the possibility of unsafe vaccines, he's an anti-vax conspiracy theorist wacko. And so therefore, we should not give him a platform to say his views. And people are too stupid. That's the underlying point, that if he is given a platform, then people are too stupid, they're going to just fall in line with him. You know, he was on Joe Rogan recently, and people were freaking out that how dare you give him a platform. But again, it's very condescending. It assumes that information, if it's false, is automatically harmful and people will all buy it. And so it's fundamentally a censorship is what it is. It's the idea that this person might say something that might harm somebody in our view. And so we need to shut them up. We need to make sure they're not able to have a public platform. And so the question is this Catholic? Is this a Catholic attitude to have? Now, I want to say, first of all, that I will admit my own preconceptions, my own views, my own personality here, which is I have a very automatic, instinctive reaction against cancel culture. So any and all calls to deplatform somebody, to censor somebody, I really reject it very quickly. And I'm not even saying I'm always right in doing that. I'm just saying that's me. And so, and people think that if you don't want somebody to cancel, that means you support their views. That's not true. I mean, a good example of this, a popular one, is Alex Jones. I know almost nothing about Alex Jones. I've seen a few clips of him. He seems crazy. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. And people are like, oh, you need to have an opinion, first of all, about whether or not Alex Jones is crazy or not. I don't. I know I've seen clips where he appears crazy, and maybe he has been crazy. Maybe he's not anymore. Maybe he wasn't before. Maybe he is now. I don't know. It's not an important enough thing for me to spend time looking into. But the point is, I don't think he should be canceled. I think he should be allowed to have a Twitter account. He should be allowed to have Facebook, be on YouTube. All those things he should be allowed to have, because I actually respect people to be able to determine whether or not it's true or false. And if he sways people to falsehood, let's say what he's saying is false. If he sways people to falsehood, well, I mean, that's their responsibility as adults to make those decisions. And I think it's I'm not going to be a nanny state in my own mind and say, oh no, tisk, tisk, don't let that person talk. And here's the other reason I'm instinctively against it, is we know that the vast majority of cases in which the powers that be, the establishment, called to silence somebody, that person being silenced was usually right. We saw it with COVID big time. I mean, we have the Twitter files. We have so much proof that during the COVID era, which I'm trying to say in the past tense because I pray it's over, we had doctors, professionals, people saying truth, and they were removed from social media for misinformation. And the things they were saying were later confirmed by the same people who censored them as being true. But because they said it in, let's say, April 2020, they need to be canceled. But if they said the exact same thing 2 years later, April 2022, then it's no controversy. And so even though I know if you have a more open platforms, less cancel culture, I know that some misinformation, so to speak, some false information will spread. I think in general, what happens is the truth does overcome falsehood ultimately. Now, so I just wanted to lay those chips on the table at first. I know that my reaction is automatically against it. And maybe it shouldn't be so strongly against cancel culture, but it is. And another thing I want to mention as a Catholic that we need to think of is that we never truly should cancel anybody. What I mean by that is nobody is beyond redemption. Nobody should be written off completely. Everybody, even the worst person, while they're still alive, can be reconciled to God, be reconciled to the church. So I also don't like that about cancel culture. Is typically it's a very permanent thing, that this person can never ever have an opinion that we will ever listen to and never have a platform ever again. And I just feel like that's wrong, because people can change. They can grow. That just because somebody said something, especially it's so bad when like you find somebody who may have tweeted something when they were 18, 10 years ago. And now we're like, oh, see, this person shouldn't be allowed to have public office. And that's just ridiculous. Now, that all being said, it's not like the Catholic Church is 100% free speech either. We have excommunications. We do cancel people, to use that term. If there is somebody in a Catholic who is obstinately a heretic and will not change, they should be excommunicated. They should be removed from the communion of the church with the hope that they will return. There's always that hope that they will return. But definitely them, if there's somebody who's employed by the church, meaning typically a bishop, a priest, or even a layperson who's employed by a church, who is stating heresy publicly and will not repent of that, will not change their views, then yes, they need to be silenced. They need to lose their jobs, lose public ministry, wherever the case may be, until they repent. So it's not like it's a you let everybody talk no matter what they're saying in every situation. No, that's not the case. There are definite cases where people need to be silenced publicly by the church. But that's the other thing is, that's the church's role, not a layperson's role. I mean, I can call for Father James Martin to be removed from public ministry. I can call for people not to go to conferences that he sponsors or speaks at. But I have no authority to do that. What people need to do is like ask the proper church authorities. Make it public, but ask the proper church authorities as well. Please silence Father James Martin and others like him. So the church has a long history of silencing people. Now, I will say also, it's not like every time they've gotten it right either. I mean, I could bring up the whole Galileo affair. There's a lot of problems with that, though, as far as like what people most know about it and what's true. But the fact is that the church officials did go too far and talk about too far in silencing scientific speech at that moment. That's not to defend Galileo and everything he did, but it is to say, yes, it is. If you look at the transcripts, and you'll see like somebody like St. Robert Bellarmine even saw this, that you can't silence scientists for legitimate science. The church can't do that. Now, the other thing is that what we can't do, though, what I feel like Catholics, so like I said, there are legitimate reasons that public figures need to be silenced by the church. By the church. I don't think companies like Twitter or Facebook or YouTube should be doing that. The only time a tech company like that should be removing somebody is for a clear and obvious case of abuse or violence, something like that. So if, for example, actually, I won't say it out loud because I'm afraid the algorithm will ding me for it. If somebody called for direct violence against somebody, a specific person, yes, I think that person, I have no problem with a tech company saying we're removing that and maybe even removing the person, the account completely. But just saying, like, for example, oh, I think this is a bad policy, or I think that what the government's saying here is a lie or something like that. No, obviously not. And I think that about even, like, I don't think Father James Martin should have his Twitter account removed by Twitter. I think the church should tell him you can't be on Twitter, but I don't think that Twitter should remove him. That's not their job. And what I think we need to do as Catholics I love this tweet. Somebody, I can't remember who it was now. Oh, getting old, can't remember. Somebody was talking about somebody on Twitter was like saying, this person can't be platform, whatever. And they said, yeah, this person has a hall monitor energy. I like that. They're like a hall monitor. Let's just be on the lookout always. Who can we cancel? Who has got a platform that shouldn't have? Let's make sure we inform their superiors, inform their bosses, do whatever we can. I will say that's what I love about my job. Feel free at any time to contact the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine and tell him what a terrible person I am. And then I will get back to you and let you know. So the point is, I really do think there's something spiritually wrong with the Catholics who are always looking to cancel other people. I just feel like there's something wrong with you if you're doing that. I'm not saying you can't like sometimes be like, oh yeah, this guy's spouting heresy. His superiors, this priest is spouting heresy. His superiors need to crack down. That's one thing. But when just some average person on Twitter saying something you don't like and your first reaction is, how can I deplatform him or have him lose his job? You got problems. You got spiritual problems as well. So I would say my guidelines then for canceling is, first of all, heresy has no rights. So if you're you work for the church in any way, either as a priest or a layperson, you don't have any rights if you're spouting heresy to continue in your public ministry, your public works for the church. I also think priests are very different from lay people. Priests, because of the nature of their vocation, nature of their role in the church, they have certain responsibilities. So a priest who is saying something that is harmful for souls, the church should step in and do something. A lay person who's saying something harmful to souls, it kind of depends. It depends on the situation. If it's just some schmo nobody cares about, whatever. If it's a very public figure who's doing it, yeah, maybe the bishop should give him a call. Have somebody from the chancery call this person, let them know, hey, I don't really think what you're doing here is right. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. And maybe even have to make a public statement. This person is not teaching the Catholic faith. I got no problem with that. But a priest particularly should be silenced if he's spouting heresy. I also think that we need to determine what's the association, what's the support that's involved here, what is being inferred. So, for example, if you are the person who is spouting something against church teaching, spouting something erroneous, okay, that person, I understand, maybe work to tell that person why they're wrong, expose them, things like that. I still wouldn't say you silence them. But if your association is something as tenuous as you're speaking at an event that that other person nobody likes is also speaking at, I just don't think that's an association that implies support for the supposedly evil person. I just don't think that's the case. And I know people do think that, but I think that's ridiculous. It's the idea that I have to confirm all the beliefs of everybody else that I'm in some way associated with. Like, for example, when we run an article at Crisis Magazine from a new author, I do not do a background check on them. If they're doing a very controversial topic on their first article, I might do a quick check to see who they are, make sure they have some standing to make these claims or whatever. But I don't do a background check. And if I found out later that the person, I don't know, had said something anti-Semitic 10 years ago, I'm not removing the article because of that. I might question future articles, particularly by the person, particularly if they're about Jews or something like that. But I'm not going to do a full background check, because if the work itself is solid, I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to put it out there. I'm just not going to be a person who is checking up on all the references on everybody. And I don't know, I don't associate people who are associated with people. I don't take all the views of one person and put it on somebody else. There's a lot of people in the Catholic world, the Catholic kind of public media world, of whom I do not agree with on a number of things, but I'm not going to refuse to be associated with them because of that. Like, for example, at this conference, Coalition Catholic Priests, I actually haven't looked that in depth at the list of speakers. I know a few of them. I don't agree with them on everything, and I don't care. And they don't care. They don't agree with me on everything. That's just the way the world is. And so I know, like, for example, I was asked to cancel Kennedy Hall, who is a regular writer for Crisis Magazine. He attends an SSPX chapel. He has said publicly some pretty strong things against the Novus Ordo Mass, which I actually disagree with a lot of them. But his articles he writes for me are great. He's obviously a faithful Catholic. I'm not going to cancel him because he has some views that I don't agree with. Now, if he offered to write an article for Crisis in which he really went against the Novus Ordo Mass, something like that, I might not publish it. If I don't think I don't have to agree with everything I publish, but depending on how it's written, I might not publish it. And he knows that. He's cool. I mean, you know, that's the thing is, we know we don't have to agree with each other on everything. So I think what we need to do also is another thing we have to do. I think we need to take a step back and look at the big picture when it comes to cancel culture. We get focused on this one example of, okay, this one person, but he really is bad. I mean, come on. His last name is Jones. He's really bad. So it's okay to cancel this one and cancel anybody who's associated with him in any way, shape, or form. But I think the problem is that we're sometimes missing the forest for the trees. The big picture here is we live in a culture that wants to cancel Catholicism. And these are the means in which they do that. They cancel the truth through deplatforming people. And so if we join in that and we say, well, we're going to deplatform people too, we're going to join in the mob, then we can't stop the mob. It's to use Alex Jones's example again, not that many people complained when he was kicked off of Twitter and off of Facebook, but just a year or two later, they kicked off the sitting United States president. It's clearly a slippery slope. And I think if Catholics go along with cancel culture, then what happens is they do end up supporting cancel culture, which ultimately will cancel Catholicism, because that's one of the goals of cancel culture. I think we need to have some humility here that we're willing to allow people who we might not agree with and who we might know are wrong, we might allow them to speak at times, trusting that people will be able to make adult decisions about whether or not they're right. Now, I want to apply this to some real world examples that some of them I've been involved in, some of them I have not, just to kind of show where I think cancel culture infects the Catholic Church, but also where it might be okay to silence people in certain cases. The first one is the case of Father Rupnik. He's the Jesuit priest who seemed to be buddies with the Pope, and he's an artist who's produced some terrible artwork that's been used in a lot of Vatican things, a lot of church things. Knights of Columbus have his artwork in their chapels. And it's been found that he's abused women. And I don't think he's abused men, but I know he's abused women, assaulted them, I believe. I can't remember the exact charges, but horrible stuff. I believe even in the context of confession. So obviously this person, number one, should immediately be removed from public ministry. And after a fair trial, if he's found guilty, then he should be removed from the priesthood completely and hopefully thrown into jail for a very long time. But the question is, how about his art? Should we tear down all his artwork? Now, I would say historically, lots of great artwork has been produced by terrible people. And we don't tear down. I think Caravaggio, for example, I think was a terrible person. If that's not true and Caravaggio's in heaven right now cringing, I apologize, but I think he's one of them. We don't tear down all the Caravaggio paintings because of that. However, in this case, we have two things happening. Number one, this is a current thing where people who are alive who have been abused by him. And so if we were to display his artwork prominently in church settings, I think that could be obviously, it would not show a lot of sympathy for the victims. But more importantly, in this case, his art is monstrous. He's a monster, but his art is monstrous too. It never should have been up in the first place. So I fully support getting rid of all the Rupnik art, because it's not art. It's horrific. It's demonic, frankly. If you've seen some of it, you'll know what I'm talking about. So I definitely think, like, Rupnik, everything about him should be canceled. I mean, he should probably be excommunicated if he doesn't repent of his errors and all that. So, but at the very least, he should be removed from public ministry, removed from the priesthood, even if assuming he's found guilty. Another person I've already mentioned a number of times, Father James Martin, again, a priest with a public ministry who's stating and promoting heresy. He should be removed from public ministry, obviously. That shouldn't even be a question. That's not canceling. That's just justice. That's just making sure the truth, that the Catholic Church representatives are promoting truth. Now, another one, which I've kind of alluded to, is the Hope is Fuel conference that was organized with Patrick Coffin about a month ago. I wrote about this at Crisis. I haven't really talked about it on the podcast. But what happened there was a number of speakers agreed to speak at this, and it was more of an online thing, more than a conference where they're physically with each other. They record something, it's put online. Patrick Coffin, who believed that Pope Benedict was still the Pope even after his supposed resignation, as Coffin would say, and now does not really, it's kind of unclear, but does not really seem to think that Pope Francis is the Pope. So he's a sedevacantist. He says he's not, but I think that's playing with words. He's organizing it, and he invited E. Michael Jones, a very controversial figure. Again, somebody like Alex Jones, I have not done a lot of research on. Now, people say, oh, well, that's just an excuse. You should find out. Well, I haven't cared that much about what he said, because honestly, in my world, I just don't hear his name that much. It's not like I run into people I'm talking to in the parish forever that they're like, the first thing they think is, oh, E. Michael Jones, you know, he said this. No, it just doesn't come up that often. I do know some people who follow him and stuff like that, but it's not that big a deal. So I haven't looked into him. Well, because he is known for his supposed anti-Semitism, and by the way, This triggers people all the time. I'm not saying he's not anti-Semite. He might be. I'm not saying he is. He might not be. And people, it drives them crazy. I won't commit to this. But until I actually read his writings, I actually look into what he said, I'm not going to call him something like an anti-Semite. I need to know myself. I need to hear it. Now, you could say, go look it up. I could, but again, I don't care that much. Again, the point though here is, once it was discovered, Dawn Eden Goldstein was the one I think first published this on Captain Hall Monitor herself on Twitter, that Patrick Coughlin was organizing it and E. Michael Jones was the speaker. And so then it was like people like Father Spitzer, Janet Smith, Peter Kwasniewski, a bunch of people, like they were speaking too. And like, oh, Steve Ray, I think Steve Ray might have been one of them. It was like, oh, no, those people need to pull out. And most of them did. And I came out initially, and I still believe this, that they shouldn't have pulled out. Now, I ran the article by Janet Smith explaining why she was pulling out. Because here's the thing that people just can't get in their thick skulls. It's a prudential matter. And I'm not saying, because I don't think, for example, Janet Smith should have pulled out. I'm not saying she's even wrong. I'm just saying I disagree with that prudential decision. I don't have any less respect for Janet because of that. I don't have any less respect for Peter Kwasniewski because he ended up pulling out. It's just like they had a different, they decided it just wasn't worth it. Okay, fine. I personally, if I had been in the exact same situation, I would not have pulled out, but I totally respect those who did. But the point is that the reason I wouldn't have pulled out is because I don't think speaking at the same conference is an endorsement of the other speakers and everything else they are saying and believing. Now, if Patrick Coughlin had come to me originally and asked me to speak and I knew Michael Jones was speaking, I might have turned it down. I don't know. You make decisions based upon a lot of factors. Your resources, is it going to be the best use of my time? But if I had said yes and then the controversy came out, I would not have then pulled out and said no, personally. But I'm not like railing on those who did. So another example of, this is like a minor example, but it shows the mentality. Recently, Trent Horn, maybe this is related somewhat to my podcast last week about Catholic apologetics being dying. Trent Horn was criticizing, or more like asking trads, like, hey, if you don't think our apologetics we do is good, how do you do it better? Show me a better way to do it. I mean, actually, I think he was more just like, you're criticizing our. Now, I hope he wasn't talking about me, because I wasn't actually criticizing the way they do apologetics. I'm criticizing more the moment we're in and that the normal way of doing apologetics isn't really working as well as it used to. But he basically then ended up asking both Tim Gordon and Taylor Marshall, how about each of you separately come on the show with a non-Catholic and debate them and do apologetics in the more trad way? And both Taylor and Tim, I believe, both said, I'd be willing to do it depending on who the person is and things like that. But I saw a couple people were saying, don't give them a platform. Telling Trent Horn, don't give Tim and Taylor a platform. And I just thought, that's what I thought. I sighed because I was like, that's just sad. I mean, you can criticize Taylor, you can criticize Tim for a lot of things, but the idea that they don't deserve to be on Trent Horn's show because of things they said, I don't get that mentality. I disagree with a number of things, particularly that Tim tweets out and says he disagrees, I'm sure, with a lot of things I do. I disagree with some of the stuff Taylor says. He disagrees with some of the stuff I do. But I'm not going to all of a sudden be like, they don't deserve platforms. First of all, Taylor has a bigger platform than Trent Horn anyway. So how can you give him a platform? He already has a bigger one. Tim might too. I don't know. But I just think that's a bad mentality. That is very much a mentality of the left. That it's not that this person is a heretical priest, for example, preaching in the name of the church who needs to be silenced. These are just two guys who happen to have podcasts and talk about their views on the church. And therefore, they shouldn't be given a platform because I don't like what they say. And then the final example I want to give is the Father Jackson, Father James Jackson, who was recently pled guilty to receiving child pornography. And so this one is an interesting one because I don't think it's quite the same. Now, what I would say though is first, when the charges first came against him, I wrote an article where I was very strongly like, we should not assume he is guilty. If he is guilty, and I made that very clear, he should be sent to jail. He should get all the punishments, deservedly so, that he should get. Obviously, he should be removed from the public ministry, removed from the priesthood, if these things are true. But I was like, yeah, no, you don't cancel him just because he's charged with a crime. I think the FSSP, the fraternity, were smart to say, okay, well, his public ministry is going to be suspended during this time. That is totally reasonable as well. When he first gets charged, you definitely don't, you pull him from public ministry. Fine. But you wait until the legal process goes out. You don't just immediately cancel the guy and cancel anybody who dared to say, let's wait to see the evidence. Let's wait to see. That's actually the Christian thing to do. That's the human thing to do. Is that when particularly when somebody you respect, you know, you admire, if they're accused of something, you wait. You just say, okay, I hope it's not true. If you don't hope it's not true, you're not human. You hope it's not true. But then if the evidence comes in that it is true, then obviously you take the steps necessary to remove him from the public sphere. And so when he pled guilty, then it's like, okay, I'm going to take his word for it that he's guilty. And at this point, then he obviously should be permanently removed from public ministry. Permanently removed from the priesthood. Because you could still be a priest in prison. So definitely permanently removed from the priesthood. Now, then the question became, what about he's in Mass of the Ages. Now, people think I like am more involved in Mass of the Ages than I am. I'm in the documentary. I was interviewed by him. But it's not like I make decisions with them. They don't ask me my opinion. I don't make the films. I don't have any inside scoop on them or anything like that. They're not calling me up and saying, Eric, what do we do next? But when they said they were not going to remove him from episode one of Mass of the Ages, I came out and supported that. I said, I think it's a terrible situation, no win situation, but you can't rewrite history. Again, you see my instinct is against cancel culture, against this like Stalinistic rewriting of history. Part of that I do think is an age thing. Like 30 years ago, if you had made a movie and somebody in the movie is a horrible person, you can't really redo the movie. It's just too difficult. And the idea is it's already there. Like, for example, Crisis Magazine, we have every article that's ever been written for us for the past 40 years is online on our website. Some of those articles are terrible. Some of them are written by terrible people. I'm not going to remove them. I mean, Mark Shea, who hates everything Crisis Magazine stands for now, was a regular writer for Crisis 10, 15 years ago. I'm not removing those articles because they were published. That's just what happened. And I feel like if you rewrite that history, that is somehow dishonest. It makes it look like, hey, let's pretend that this never happened. It did happen. You have to own it. And the fact is that Mass of the Ages had Father Jackson on that first film. We had nobody had any clue. That's the one thing I want to make clear is like, there's been no evidence that anybody had any clue that he was doing this. And by the way, I just want to make note, I do know some people still think he's not guilty. If you want to believe that, that's fine. I just believe if he says publicly he's guilty, I'm just going to take his word for it. Now, that being said, so he's in that film, that first one, and I feel like, okay, that's just the way it is, and that's sad. And maybe that means nobody watches episode one anymore, and it's a terrible blow to tradition. Well, that's the reality. That's awful. Now, that all being said, and I really do believe that, Mass of the Ages then reversed course and said, we are going to remove episode one. We're going to redo things and remove Father Jackson. And I think re-release it. I think that's what they said. Here's the thing. I support that as well. I'm not like going to rail on them for that because I don't think that either situation is that good. And I understand basically the Father Jackson Association ruined episode one. It made episode one unwatchable for a lot of people, unshareable. And I get that. I would have been very hesitant too if I was talking to somebody new to tradition, say, hey, why don't you check out this documentary? I would be hesitant to do that after Father Jackson, you know, pled guilty. I admit that freely. So I support that as well. I'm not going to rail on Mass of the Ages for that. And I and the people who called on them to pull him, okay, fine. Now I will say some people were basically saying that they were endorsing child porn. I saw somebody said that, like, somehow by not removing him, by saying I didn't want to remove him, I thought that child porn wasn't as bad as actually engaging in the acts. I mean, what the heck? That's the whole point, is that's not what it means. Just because I didn't think he needed to be removed from episode one didn't mean I think episode one all of a sudden is fine or that child porn is fine. I mean, it's ridiculous how we jumped all these major conclusions. So ultimately, I'm very sad of the impact it's had on Mass of the Ages. Obviously, it's not their fault. It's not our fault. It's Father Jackson's fault, ultimately. And so we just have to deal with that. So either way they had gone, I would have supported them. And I respect the fact that they listened to people and they wanted to do what they thought was best. And here's the thing, is I understand them changing their mind. You think, okay, this is, like, my first reaction was immediately, don't cancel, don't rewrite history. And I still have that gut reaction, but I get where they get the feedback and they realize episode one's basically now destroyed. Let's just redo it somehow. That's fine too. Okay, I'm going a little long here, so let me just wrap it up here. And so I just really think that we need to have a automatic kind of distrust of cancel culture. Cancel culture itself, as it's practiced today, is not Catholic. We should embrace vigorous discussions, vigorous debates. We don't believe in guilt by association. We don't look at certain people as unclean that we can't ever be associated with. But this doesn't mean we don't strongly oppose people, especially priests, when they spew heresy and when they try to harm souls. It doesn't mean we have to give everybody a platform. Not everybody who submits an article to Christ Magazine, I'm going to publish it. It doesn't mean I have to give everybody a platform. But at the same time, we allow a vigorous discussion of ideas and debate. The proclamation of the truth is the most important thing, not the shutting down of those who we oppose. It's far more important to proclaim the truth than it is to always try to root out all error. I'm not saying we don't have times where we shouldn't be against error and try to root it out inside the church, but I am saying the idea of, especially on prudential matters, that we don't allow discussion of more controversial things, I think is just ridiculous. So, okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. I appreciate everybody for tuning into this one. Until next time, everybody, God love you.